Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge, show number 58. This is November 11th, 2013, and happy Veterans Day to all the servicemen and women out there that have served this wonderful country. Introducing the show today, of course, this is a show where we showcase new authors, and I am your host, Tom Riddell. Normally, we would have Robin Eduardo here, but she had an emergency-type situation and may not be able to be on, but in her place, waiting in the wings, will be co-host Brian Anderson, waiting on deck here if Robin doesn't show up. A brief intro to today's show. We have on, again, another returning author, Eric Ekstrom, who wrote the Everett Holmes series. And his book this time around is Everett Holmes, Sanctuary of the Damned. So we'll bring him on about quarter after the hour, wherever you are. The Writer's Lounge blog at tomriddell.com/blog. You can head over there and check out all the reviews I've done over the last couple of years. And in the upper left-hand corner, you'll find the Blog Talk Radio player, and you will be able to listen to all the shows of our favorite authors here on the Writer's Lounge. Of course, look for us on Facebook. Find us at the Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors over there on Facebook. And also, we are on Twitter. Follow us there, and you can contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. Send us an email if you'd like. Upcoming guest authors, next time around, we will have on Brian Anderson, my co-host for tonight, possibly, and he wrote the Godling Chronicles series, and coming up next time on November 25th, the Godling Chronicles book number 4, A Trial of Souls. That's something you're not going to want to miss. Brian has really been climbing that success ladder, and we'll talk to him in just a minute about his book. And then coming up on December 9th, a very special author, and I say special because in the 2.5 years I've done the program, I've never had anybody back on the show from my hometown, and I am proud and eager and excited to bring on a man by the name of Jim Murphy, who wrote My Life Before I Decided to Commit Suicide. Now, don't be fooled by the title. So far, I've been reading this book. It's a hilarious accounting of his days growing up in his hometown, of course, which I said was also my hometown of Nedro, New York. And he will be on December 9th. Literally today, I had tears running down my face, laughing so hard from his book. So that'll be fun. I hope everybody from my hometown will be able to join in to that program. And that reminds me, if you'd like to give us a call here at the Writer's Lounge, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. And today with the promos, today I just want to let everybody know that if you're interested in book promotions on the Writer's Lounge, you can head over to our Facebook page, learn more about that over there, and find out what you need to do to promote your book on the show. And we've got some promos here. They're advertisements. And I will first go with The God Within by Hazel Synanen. And the description of the book, The God Within Speaks is intended to inspire others to take inward steps through intent, desire, and action to allow their higher selves to work and live through them in order to facilitate higher consciousness, which will open them up to the flow of the mighty source. As the author unites her mind with that of her higher self, allows her higher self to think with and through her, and surrenders to the insights of her higher mind, wisdom flows. Of course, that once again is The God Within by Hazel Synanen. And you can do a search anywhere on the internet. Everybody knows how to do that now. Go ahead and Google that, The God Within by Hazel Synanen. Also, GMTA brings another author to the show, Ann Cleaves, Henry's Luckiest Wife by D. Lawrence Young. Book description there is, it is winter 1539. King Henry VIII is galloping through the night to Rochester to meet a young woman. Just arrived in England from Germany, Anne of Cleves is destined to become his fourth wife. He has never met her before. He has only seen her portrait, the portrait of a sweet, demure, and innocent young woman. The impatient and love-sick king must see her before their marriage. But this rushed and unplanned rendezvous will shock them and the country both. It will also lead to some completely unexpected and fatal results. Once again, it's Anne Cleaves, Henry's Luckiest Wife by D. Lawrence Young. Do a Google for that. And next book up here, Book Rain by Cheryl Daniels. Book description, Nia Timmons was alone in the world, or so she thought. Her need for love led her carelessly into the arms of an abusive man, now on the run from him. She stumbles into a family who isn't what they seem. She soon discovers that neither is she. What she does find to be true is that she's drawn to Rain, a man once held contempt for. Now it's unbridled passion and love. The last thing the handsome and wealthy Rain DeLucas wanted was to fall in love. A womanizer, he vowed to never give his heart to anyone. However, he couldn't resist the heated passion he feels tonight. Inevitably, they are bound together by passion, love, and blood, which Rain needs to sustain his life. Because of their love, a war that started over 800 years ago dangerously comes streamrolling to the present. Multi-species old enemies are woven together with one common thread, Nia. With her life endangered, she and Rain must depend on their love to survive and save the human race. Once again, it's Blood Rain by Cheryl Daniels. Do a Google for that one. And as we bring on or are about to bring on my co-host, which is Brian Anderson, I'm going to play an ad for Brian, from Brian. And here's Brian's ad for the Godling Chronicles series.
Hi, this is Brian D. Anderson, author of the Godling Chronicles, and I have an exciting opportunity for fans of the series. From now until New Year's Eve, I'll be accepting submissions for fan fiction short stories based on the Godling Chronicles. They need to be between 1,000 and 25,000 words and be in some way about the Godling Chronicles world or characters. And now that you know the rules, let's make with the excitement. Third prize is a signed copy of all four Godling Chronicles books. Second prize, your short story will be professionally edited and published on Amazon.com. The grand prize, your short story will be edited and published, but you also win a contract to have a novel written by you and published under the GMTA label. That's right. If you win, you become a published author. The contract will include editing, proofing, and cover art. And if you haven't written your novel yet, don't worry. The contract's open-ended, so it will be there when you're ready. All submissions should be sent by midnight, January 1st, 2014, to thegodlingchronicles at gmail.com. And the winner will be announced February 3rd right here on this show. Good luck, and I'm looking forward to reading your stories.
And with that, let's bring on my co-host and very good friend, Brian D. Anderson. I want to make sure I get in D. I believe the D stands for devil. How are you doing, Brian?
Hey, the D is actually because there are some other authors with Brian Anderson is a pretty common name, and I added my middle initial when I first wrote the first book of the Godling Chronicles to sort of distinguish myself from the other authors.
Very good. So how you doing, my friend?
Man, if I were any better, there'd be two of me.
Think of how many books you could write if there was actually two of you.
Oh my God! Yeah, actually, yeah, I've been working my tail off, my friend. You have no idea. I'm slated to finish book five by the end of this month. Have it into editing. I've been working on the Goblin Chronicles is now through Podium Publishing. Going to be an audiobook, the entire series.
Oh.
Yeah. It's there's been amazing things happening, and it's been a lot of work though, man.
Yeah,
I'm actually grateful for a moment like this when I get to just talk books and talk stories.
Yeah, and we will have you on the next show. And before we, you know, get too deeply into the next show's topics, we talk a little bit more about life in general here. And my understanding is that you moved from the East Coast down to the Lower East Coast in, I believe, Florida. And I was just wondering.
I moved to Milton, Florida, yes.
Milton, Florida. And how has that affected your writing?
The process itself has not been that much different. You know what I mean? I'm one of those kind of people that if I can just pretty much put myself in a little bubble and,
yeah,
you know, shut out the world. But it's so much easier and so much more relaxing to do that when outside that bubble isn't chaos.
Yeah.
And it's so, as much as I love New York, don't get me wrong, I do. I lived there for 13 years of my life. And all through my 30s, I was in New York. You know, an entire epic portion of a man's life, I lived in New York. But now that I'm back down here, man, and it's just been so great. You know what I mean? I'm sitting here on my front porch right now in a pair of shorts in November.
Oh, don't talk to me about that. It's cold up here in Minnesota, and
y'all only have those two seasons. You have winter and that little short period where it's called not winter.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and then everybody that's really winterized up here gets a chance to go down to the frozen lakes and catch themselves some fish when it's like 30 below zero. So that's coming up shortly. That's coming up.
Probably
in another couple of weeks we'll be having those temperatures. And, well, I'm not looking forward to it. I normally am a winter person, but not this year because last year drew out too long. It was too long of a winter here in Minnesota.
I got to say, I've been listening to the show. You know, I listen to your archives, and you've had some really talent. You've had a lot of talent on this show, man.
Oh,
I got to say.
Definitely.
You know what? This show has almost become like a little icon-ish type thing, you know, where a lot of people are getting their start. And, you know, it's really growing. And this was the first real media thing I ever did. And I'm doing really well now, but I'm not the only one that's been on the show that is,
off. Funny you mentioned that, because if you weren't going to be on, I was going to play a clip from J.K. Rowling, and everybody knows who J.K. is at this time. If you don't, you're living in some sort of a tunnel. But the Harry Potter series came to be from an unknown writer on a train that decided to write on a piece of paper, and there you go. But getting back to what you were saying in the Writer's Lounge here, we've had many TWL authors have gone on to be very successful, as in you have, and in their writings and books. And I just wanted to thank everybody once again for making the show a success. But the main thing is here, not to pat our backs, I would say it's more them than it is us. We're just we provide the venue for the authors to come on, and we're waiting patiently for a lot of successful authors, and we've already had a few, and I'm looking for some more. So it'll be fun.
Well, the indie publishing world has been exploding over the past few years, you know? It's just been amazing, the amount of quality. I mean, it really started out with just a bunch of people shooting stuff up on the Amazon, you know, trying to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
But it has really developed into a place where readers can find very quality work and quality authors that
absolutely,
you know, normally they would not have access to.
Absolutely. And Brian, let's get on with the main event here. It's Everett Holmes, Sanctuary of the Damned, was written by Eric Ekstrom and published by Vigilante Publishing Group in 2013. And you may purchase it over at Amazon.com/Kindle. That's where you get most of our books. Visit the author on Facebook. And I reviewed Everett Holmes, The Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer, in March of 2012. And once more, Eric Ekstrom brings back the eccentric and formidable detective Everett Holmes, who becomes involved in yet another horrific crime spree. The great-grandson of Sherlock has spent the last 10 years of his life searching for the fingerprint serial killer who was once his friend, but all leads have dried up, and an aging Everett drops further into drug abuse, and his disheveled lifestyle seems to be catching up to him. Everett has been asked by the Chicago Police Department to consult in tracking down another serial killer who is brutally killing his victims at a very rapid pace. Despite Everett's addictive demons and a flu that threatens to take him to the grave, he is as tenacious as ever in hunting down the demented and mentally warped lowlife who is playing God and judging his sinful victims and sending them to their deaths. Eric Ekstrom has taken his writing skills to a higher level with his newest installment of the Everett Holmes series. The gruesome descriptions of the murders in this story will make you cringe, and the forensic details are so very well laid out that it's hard to believe that this is a work of fiction. And above all else, you will find yourself rooting for Everett as he navigates all the amazing and exciting twists and turns in this story. Everett is a character that fans of Eric Ekstrom will want to see more of. This book is a solid work of very good writing, and it's a keeper. And now, drum roll, we push the magic button. There you go, it's Brian's drum roll. And on to the program for the third time, one of our favorite authors, Eric Ekstrom.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Doing great, Ex.
Great. I'm living the whirlwind right now, man. Enjoying the ride.
Yep, and it's good to hear that you are.
What else can you do, my friend?
So, Eric, you do know Brian, apparently, right?
I know of him. I've never actually spoken to him, but I know of him. I know
he's
of his
work.
He's
the guy with the flowing robes and the and he's got the king and the crown there on him now because he's at the top of the list, my friend.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet
goodness.
You finally, Brian.
It is a pleasure to meet you as well, man. The description. I'm sorry, I haven't read the book. it sounds awesome, man. What a great concept.
It is. It's really good. And Eric, if you wouldn't mind, could you read us an excerpt from your book?
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
Sure. Actually, what I'll do is I'll read a little portion that describes the killer in the book, who's the Rose Hill Ripper, and a little bit of his surroundings. The hours pass.
Before you do that,
yeah.
Bose Hill.
Rose Hill.
Rose Hill, and this is set where?
Yeah, it's in Chicago.
Chicago, awesome.
Mm-hmm. All right. The hours passed and the night faded away. The morning light never came. Never came to awaken the soul, never came to show the promise of a new day. Instead, large drops of rain pelted the city, turning a picturesque skyline to ash gray. The human form in the corner of the room remained silent and motionless, almost statue-like in appearance. His body was covered from head to toe in a dark brown cotton robe with a hood, reminiscent of those worn in monastic orders. The fabric was old, torn and tattered with small burn holes peppered around the long flowing sleeves. The robe was held tightly around the middle with a thick, knotted piece of rope. He stood there, seemingly gripped in a hypnotic trance, unable to move. Then, as if his consciousness had been awakened, his eyelids began to flutter open, revealing dark eyes. He continued to face the wall, staring at the dark gray mortar outlining the bricks in front of him. His tongue slowly protruded from his mouth as he licked his dry, cracked lips. He lifted the cross at the end of his rosary slowly up to his lips and kissed it. "Praise be to God," he said in a low, gruff voice. The man placed the rosary around his neck and carefully dropped it inside his robe. His fingers moved up towards his forehead as he gave the sign of the cross. Slowly he turned away from the wall that he had been facing for hours, and the entire room came into view. His eyes moved around the room as he took in the details of his secret hideaway. On the west side, a medium-sized crucifix made of a swirl of black and white marble hung from the wall. Just a few feet below the cross, a single candle danced in the darkness. The wax dripped slowly down into a narrow 2-foot-long box on the floor. The narrow wooden receptacle was filled with broken shards of stained glass of different colors, shapes, and sizes that were covered in dried blood and wax. He stood there and looked at it, sparkling in the orange glow of the flickering candlelight, for a very long time, remembering all the churches he had visited over the years, collecting their damaged goods, and eventually having them end up here, shattered into bits and pieces, placed layer by torturous layer within the box. He used it as a tool to inflict pain while the sinner knelt in repentance. It was quite effective, even with its simple and crude design. Those who ended up there in prayer could feel the pain of Jesus' suffering for a long time, and if only a moment, take him into their soul and beg for mercy. As his eyes moved toward the east, he saw a leaking faucet a few feet off the floor, dripping water into a half-rusted paint can. The incessant sound echoed throughout the room like a natural metronome. As he continued to scan the room, a smile appeared on his unshaven face. The walls were covered from one end to the other in varying forms of blood spatter, layer upon layer, each telling its own macabre story. He studied the brick walls in awe, suddenly realizing the amounts of fresh blood that had been spilled just the night before. His hands moved up into the air as he traced the patterns of blood, albeit from a distance. The blood had not yet fully dried, and certain areas still glistened in the dancing candlelight. A feeling came upon him quickly, rushing to his head and surrounding his body in ecstasy. He thirsted for more. As bits and pieces came back to him, and his eyes finally began to adjust to the dimly lit room, the look on his face changed to that of a smirk of a child who got away with something. His head tilted downwards towards the darkness below. The body of a young woman in her early 20s lay face up, sprawled out across the stone floor. A dark, drying pool of blood surrounded what was left of her head. She had been stripped naked, and her hands and feet had been bound with rope, matching the homemade belt around her killer's waist. Deep inset ligature marks of varying shades of color circled her neck, layer upon layer, line over line, indicating repeated multiple strangulations and torture. Her knees were strewn with cuts and slices, and small jagged pieces of glass were embedded into them. She had obviously been forced to kneel in the glass-filled wooden box, a sinner saying her final prayers. Her mouth had been gagged with a small terry cloth towel, her lips blue and sagging over the rough material. A long piece of duct tape had been wrapped around her head, completely covering her eyes. As she lay there cold and stiffening, rigor mortis had set in. The man in the shroud looked down at her with a childlike curiosity. She had been in the damp, icy cold room for 7 days, a hostage for 6 of them. Her skin was pale, depleted of the blood that had coursed its way through her veins only hours before. The only true colors left on her exposed skin were patches of freckles that adorned her body. Her long red hair was sticky and matted together from the blood that had flowed through the open gash in her head. As he turned his attention away from the body on the floor, he moved slightly to the right and once again faced the corner in which he had stood most of the night in solemn prayer. He looked down and saw the machete leaning in the corner at an angle, dried blood covering the handle and the blade. As he closed his eyes, he began to think once again about the events of the previous night.
Very good. I want to call you Everett. You're not Everett. You're the guy who wrote Everett. Eric, normally at this time I'd ask you a nice involved question, but we do have a caller on the line, and we would like to get to them. And caller, Do you have a question or comment for Eric? Hello, 979.
Hi. I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask what inspired the sequel to the sequel Everett Home story?
To be honest with you, I have pictured this kind of story or this particular story probably to go for about 15 different books. So I wanted to continue with that, but the fan appreciation for that book really inspired me to keep going with it. So that was kind of like a nice little boost for me to see that I had something that was worth, you know, writing and continuing on the saga of Everett Holmes.
Very good. Caller, thank you so much. Do you have anything else to say?
I just wanted to ask also, when you became inspired to write Sanctuary of the Damned, was there anything that made you go that direction with the religious and the torture and stuff?
No, it was something that I had thought about for a while, as far as how they say there's religious fanatics and so forth. I wanted to take it 20 steps ahead on that. I wanted to make somebody that was doing it for their own personal reasons, which they thought was right. They thought it was what they were supposed to do, and it turned out that it's not. I mean, of course, it's not what you're supposed to do, but, you know, in their mind, in their psychosis at the moment, that's what they were thinking of doing. So
sure. Cool.
That's kind of the route I went with it.
Well, hey, caller,
awesome.
Thanks for calling, caller, and call back again.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Bye.
Thanks for calling.
Bye. Okay, one of Eric's fans there, and Eric, she alluded to the religion, and as I have said before, and been talked to a couple of friends, there are many scenes in this book that are very shocking and could be disturbing to some readers. What are your thoughts about whether to include such content or not? And I think you know what I'm getting at. There's a lot of very gory parts of the book, but once again, that also makes it a very good book and a very good read where you want to keep picking up the book and reading it. So can you tell us what your thoughts are on that?
Well, you know, Tom, when I was on the show last time, we were doing Everett Holmes' Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer, and in that book as well, there's some, you know, very dramatic scenes that take place. And at that point, I had gone back and forth on whether or not I should just, you know, push the envelope and just go all the way, you know. And then I was second, you know, basically self-doubting myself, saying, okay, maybe it's too much. But with the new one, basically, when I sat down to write it, I got rid of all the mental fences that were blocking me that I had in the first book. And I just created the scenes and situations that, unfortunately, you would see in the news on a daily basis. Things like this actually happen. And it's my job as a writer to give the reader a story that they're not just going to enjoy, but I want them to become a part of it. I want them to feel each scene that I create, and, you know, like the movies are visually creative. For me, I would like to heighten all their senses when they read my stuff. So yeah. I actually have no qualms about going all the way with it on this one.
As Brian Anderson would say in his book, you let it flow. There's a character in his book that flows quite a bit. So, but anyway, getting back to Brian. Brian, do you have any
I have a question that's kind of away from the story itself. More about the being a writer aspect, you know, being an indie writer.
Mm-hmm.
what have you found as an indie writer trying to, you know, get you, you know, in the giant sea of other indie writers, what have you found to be the biggest challenge, you know, getting noticed and getting your name out there and your work out there?
You know, I read a lot of indie stuff that's out there too. So, you know, I kind of have a general idea of the stuff that's out there. My biggest thing is I want to be, you know, completely different than anybody else. And I've noticed that a lot of people don't push that literary envelope. They don't give it their all as far as, you know, just pushing it and taking every scene to as far as you can, like, basically take it.
I'm assuming you're talking about your within your genre.
Within my genre, correct, which is basically psychological thrillers.
I was going to say, I write fantasy, and there's only so far you can take that, man.
That is true. That is true. Certain genres. I should restate that. It's going to be psychological thrillers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I try to read as many psychological thrillers that I possibly can, whether it's well-known or indie writers. And you can tell where a lot of them kind of hold off. I look at the stories and I go, oh, man.
Do you feel they're like trying to be mainstream
I think so. I think they're trying to conform into what they see that actually sells out there. Like, you know, mm-hmm. they're looking at best-selling authors, and they're trying to work a formula to go with what they're doing. And sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, I've seen stories that are just absolutely amazing, but they could be just so much better. You know what I mean?
Yeah
I really do.
Hey, Eric, I've got another involved question here, but once again, you've got a ton of fans out there, and we do have another caller from the 979 area code. I'm not sure what the other one was. I can't remember, but... caller, do you have any questions or comments for Eric Ekstrom? You're on the Writer's Lounge.
Am I muted?
No, you're ready to go.
Oh, okay.
You're unmuted.
Hi, Eric. This is River. And,
hey, how's it going?
Good. It's great to talk to you again. I just want mine is just a comment. I just wanted to say that it's not often that you read a story and you're haunted by the story. And I don't say that in a light manner. You know, his character, the way that you developed it, so finely tuned that his demons haunted me. They haunted my mind. I was reading it, and I was sweating, and I was feeling like him, and I was haunted by it. And I just wanted to say that just that and that I think that, you know, it's an amazing, amazing psycho thriller. Because, I'm easily, I don't know. I don't usually read psycho thrillers, but... I've always found that with your Everett Holmes series that it really, like, I don't know, it, like, speaks to something deep inside of me and, you know, really kind of freaks me out, but in a good way.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
That's a very, very good compliment. And, caller, thanks for calling, and call back again sometime. We're always here on Mondays, every other Monday, and we'd love to hear from you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Eric. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I don't think I get that many calls in a day, Eric. You've been on here for a couple of minutes, and I'm feeling kind of, left out here.
Actually, it kind of brings up a question. It kind of brings up a question I have.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we obviously you've been at this for a while, and acquired a fan base. And we all have our fans that really, 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 really dig our stuff. How do you deal with that? How do you separate yourself from your fan base?
You know, it's hard to do. I mean, I'm sure you deal with it just the same too.
We all have our mega fans, you know. Right. But how do you because you can't get so close to where it, you know, interferes with the work, but at
right.
the same time, it's so ultra, ultra flattering, especially as an indie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think I have to say that I think the biggest thing that I have to, I don't even know how to put it, but the biggest question I get asked on a consistent basis by my, as you called it, mega fans is, when's the next book coming? And the thing is with,
yeah.
I mean, my books average about, I don't know, 560 pages or something like that. And yeah. And the new Everett book that I'm working on pretty much roadmapped it out, and we're looking at closer to about 800 pages. And it takes a lot of time to...
Are you going strictly digital? Because the print costs on that for an indie would be outrageous.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would, but then again, I'm also...
It'd be like a $40 paperback.
it would be expensive, yes. But as I was saying, I mean, it's you know, it takes a lot, as any writer, actual writer will know, and especially in my genre, specifically where you're trying to create this, you know, I know Tom had brought up before about twists and turns and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, trying to lead off the readers into different directions so they don't know.
Do you map
who,
that out ahead of
what?
Time?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Eric, about the twist and turn storyline, and how do you decide to do that? Do you decide to do that at the beginning before you write, or... on occasion, do you twist it while you're writing?
Well, I think when I'm creating my original roadmap, before I even start, I usually have about maybe two or three possible twists that I'm going to put into the story. But as it evolves, some things just, of course, you know, they pop into your head as the story's starting to flow and move along.
The outline collapses at that point.
it basically does. It's like the story takes over. So then you just start rolling with that. And like I said, this is why, you know, novels take so long to actually write, to create a good novel, something that's just not slapped together, but to actually have an incredible plot and twists and turns and, you know, stuff like that. So,
yeah. And Eric, the last caller, I think, had a great comment. I loved it, where she was saying she was, haunted by the character. She had, you know, she was just pulled in by him. And what do you think the appeal is to characters like Everett? Why do fans love them, including their addictions and disheveled lifestyles, as we know that Everett has? And, of course, along with that comes a lot of psychological issues. So why do you think that happens?
My honest opinion, I think the appeal is that there's a little bit of Everett in everyone, or at least in people, you know, that the readers know. Everybody knows somebody that has quirks and things of that nature, and, you know, reasons
for
who
they
are.
Something to do with
yeah.
genre?
It might.
Yeah.
No, you do have what I've noticed is I have a lot of friends and other indie writers that write in different genres, and what we've collectively noticed is that our fan bases are so very different people.
You know what? That's a good possibility. I've never actually thought about that before, but you're probably right. I mean... Yeah.
Well,
I have to say you're probably right about that.
Yeah.
Good job, Brian.
One of the characters that I think about in the light of Everett on television would be Monk. Are you familiar with his series?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's an Tony appeal Shalhoub. For that to that character, too, where a lot of people tune in to watch his antics, and I have to wonder if it's because not so much of, well, I guess the behavior with, you know, being in a very messy apartment and drinking and shooting up drugs all the time, I guess would have an appeal
to
some people.
Don't shoot up drugs, Tom.
What's that? You don't shoot up drugs? What do you do?
I was teasing Tom.
I know you were teasing me. Give me the hose.
Put the lotion in the basket.
Exactly. Eric, how do you research your story? How much time do you spend researching your story?
I would say on average it's about a year worth of research, give or take. That's down to actual places and, you know,
you live
forensic.
In Chicago?
What's that?
You live in Chicago?
I was born and raised there, but I'm now in Arizona for the last, 12 years?
No, the reason I ask is you have authors like, say, Anne Rice, just to pick one out of the air, and when she describes New Orleans, you can genuinely tell she lives there.
Right, right. There's actually kind of a offshoot here. The Rose Hill Ripper, a lot of this stuff takes place in an actual Rose Hill Cemetery, which is one of the largest and oldest cemeteries in Chicago. And my father was actually reading my book not too long ago and said, "Hey, did you know that your great-grandparents are buried there?" And I'm like, "No, had no idea about that." But
yeah, no, it just kind of comes to the point that we do all write what we know. I mean, even from the perspective you're doing a psychological thriller, you're going to set it into a place where it's going to be a place where you can go from point A to point B without having to stumble over it.
On a normal basis, yes. This new book, the third in the series, is actually in places that I have not been before. So.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. I'm doing a lot of regular research.
What are you doing to compensate? Is what my question. What are you doing? Are you doing a lot of research on the cities, or are you planning trips, or?
Actually, both. Have been doing a lot of research. You know, via internet, via travel guides, via planning a trip to go there, stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
I figure if you're going to write about it, you need to know about it, you know, every detail that you can get.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the reason, kind of the reason I asked. I mean, when I asked where it was based earlier on in the show,
right?
You know, this is your second book. I have ideas for books of my own where I'm like hesitant until I've done research. Even approach them, and we all know as writers, you know, we got to be genuine.
Mm-hmm. That's right. If you want to make the story believable, you have to, because you'd be surprised how many people will pick something out. I've read stuff before from people who are writing their story, or at least a portion of their story was based in Chicago, and like I said, being born and raised there, they were way off. So it's like, wait a second, did you even look that up? Because, you know, it's not like that. So
yeah, you can tell they didn't even bother, you know.
They didn't put the effort in on it, so.
They didn't even read a travel guide.
Basically.
Yeah. Eric, as a writer, Brian and I have been alluding to, have you learned anything of a significance from the first book to the second book? And what I mean by that is, were there tools that you didn't have before that you have now that made it better than the first? Or what did you learn from, for instance, from reviews and comments that were left behind on the first book?
You know, I think a lot of the stuff that I took from the first book was actually from reviews, and nothing's quite specific, but that my next book, which is Sanctuary of the Damned, had better be a better book than the first. You know, so it, the fan base actually pushed me to go that extra mile. I mean, not that I didn't want to do it myself, but to you know, make the fans happy. I mean, they're purchasing a book. They're considered a fan. They love what they're reading. They
do
want
you feel
to
that pressure,
going.
Though? Do you
there
feel
is
that
pressure.
I mean, I know I do. I'm 5 books into my own series. And I feel this pressure to make the – because I'm – you know, I'm not Stephen King, so I can't have big duds out there. Yeah, I mean, Stephen King can write a dud and still be
right.
Stephen King.
And it'll still be on the bestseller list.
I can't do that. Do you feel that pressure to make the next book better than the previous?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Every part of me feels it when you sit there and you're just starting out, you know, you have that blank screen and the blinking cursor and there's nothing on the page and it's like, okay, here we go. Got to make it better than the first one. Got to make it better, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a lot more involved with each book as it goes.
Eric,
yeah.
As far as Everett Holmes is concerned, do you see him going on for a long period of time as far as books concern, or do you see it ending at some point?
Honestly, Everett's not going anywhere anytime soon. I have right now 4 more books that are pretty much outlined to a point. And then also I have some ideas flowing with some other parts, other stories that are going to happen as well. So
that was actually
going to
be my question. Are you going to stick with Everett for a long time? Or are you going to kind of diversify? Is this going to be, you know, kind of like how Dan Brown does, every book he writes has the same protagonist? Or are you going to continue with this series and also do other things?
I'm actually going to be doing other things. In fact, I have 4 books that are supposed to be coming out next year, and one of them is Everett, and the other 3 are completely different. So,
how do you find the time? I'm actually asking that very seriously.
Lack of sleep. Actually, any time that I can find the time to write. Plus, actually, for the last 8 months, we've opened up our own publishing company, me and 2 partners. So we've been doing that as well. We already have some clients on board, so we're doing that. So trying to find the time to write is difficult, but if you love
it. How many words do you try to write a day? I mean, I know I try to do 2,000 a day.
I was just going to say about 2,000. About 2,000, if, you know, maybe sometimes more, sometimes less. It just depends on how much time I have available. So
you're probably like me then. You like write 300 or 400 words, do something else, and write 300, 400, 500 words more, then come back.
usually when I get to it, it just depends on how it's flowing. If it's flowing, I'll write, you know, 300, 400, 500, 600 pages. Straight through, you know.
That's,
you know,
awesome. I mean, because 2,000 words, people don't understand how many words that really is.
Right. Well,
right.
You know, like I said, unless you're a writer, an actual writer, people who are not writers don't realize what goes into it as well. They really don't have a clue. They just think it's easy. I've actually been told that. Oh, writing's easy. Like, really?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
It's not easy at all. And Everett was somebody that I think that's going to go on for quite a long time, and I hope he does. Got about 5 minutes left here, Eric. And any writing, editing, or publishing advice that you'd like to pass along to all those people out there right now who are listening to you and who want to be a writer someday or an author? I know there's writers and then there's authors, but what kind of advice would you give them?
You know, honestly, and I think I touched on this a little bit before, as far as writing advice, don't slap stuff together for the reader's sake. You know, if something is going to take a little bit longer to create what you want to create. I mean, you're writing it, that's your baby. You're writing it. You know, so don't slap it together just because you're getting pressure from readers saying, where is it? Where is it? You know, they're going to understand why it took extra time once they read it. You know, that's my biggest thing is just, you know, you almost have to, you're writing for the readers, but you're also writing for yourself. So just do the best that you can do and don't let, you know, don't let the critics out there, you know, bring you down.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's good to have a bad review, and I've mentioned this on past programs where you get a ton of 5 stars, and then people are wondering, who are these people? Are they all friends of the author?
I'm going to tell you something, man.
Then you'll see a 2 or a 3 star in there, and then you think, well, this kind of brings the author back down to the ground a little bit and gives them a little bit of, what I'm trying to say is a realistic flavor of what's out there. So, I can understand that. And I'm also wondering about, how this has changed your life from when you've started writing, your own personal life. How has it changed it?
Honestly, I think I've become more creative since I've been writing in other aspects of my life. For example, I've been doing actually a lot of studying of scenes from behind the lens now for film production. I've been creating book trailers and stuff for people, finding more creative ways to do that. And I'm actually in the process right now of creating a radio theater show called Veil of Night, which is a modern-day version of the old-time radio shows before there was television. With a Twilight Zone kind of twist to it. So, it's changed in my creativity, I think. I've just every aspect of my life has gotten more creative.
Are you able to, at this point in your career, do this for a living?
Not at this point. I work a full-time job. Like I said, I have my publishing company now on top of that and writing and radio shows and you name it. So I'm keeping in the mix, keeping busy.
Yep. It's like everybody else is, Brian.
Awesome.
So anyway, Eric, if you could let us know where people can find you out on the internet.
Okay. Well, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. And also I have a weekly blog article every Wednesday on vigilantepublishinggroup.wordpress.com. And all my books can be found on Amazon at this point.
Very good. So we really appreciated having you on once again, and we look forward to that next book in the series. And, Brian, would you like to add something there?
Yeah, I'd like to say, hey, you're doing your own publishing thing. That's awesome. Contact me. I'm pretty easy to find. Maybe I can help.
And it's Brian D. Anderson, right?
Brian D.
All right, gotcha. Okay, I will definitely contact you, Brian.
Delusional, right. Devil, delinquent, devil. Okay there, Eric. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun, and we look to have you back on the program sometime soon. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Brian, have a good night, guys.
Take care.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
There we go, Brian, and that ends another show on the Writer's Lounge. That's show number 58. And, Brian, before I talk to you, my friend, we got some more promos to do here, which, once again, can go over to the Facebook page at the Writer's Lounge and look to see how you could get your book onto the promo. And we look forward to hearing from you and seeing your book over there on Facebook and also on our show, which we will put on for 2 shows following the initial promo request. And getting back to the promos here, we have Christmas Terror Tales, Stories to Enjoy from October through December by Kevin Polliard. Book description, Christmas Terror Tales, Stories to Enjoy from October through December. 16 gripping tales inspired by classical horror and urban legends twist holiday themes into chilling cautionary tales. A mischief snowman frames the children who built him for its misdeeds. A haughty priest offers shelter to a hideous monster posing as an orphan. A father brings home a cursed Christmas tree, resulting in a terrifying, haunting experience for his family. From October through December, these stories of devils, spirits, murders, monsters, and surprise twists will fascinate children and their parents. Christmas Territory, Stories to Enjoy from October through December by Kevin Follier. Go ahead and look that up on your favorite Google site. And the next one would be Storms of Deliverance by Larry Higdon. A man called Bad News Johnson seeks atonement for a life of heavy drinking and violence. In his quest to reunite with his wife, his ex-wife, and their daughter, he encounters possible time travel, possible ghosts, and storms both real and metaphorical. Larry Higdon has, in addition to his writing, worked as an elementary school counselor. He is a registered play therapist and a lawyer. This is his first novel. His second novel, The School from Hell, should be available soon. And once again, that's The Storms of Deliverance by Larry Higdon. The last promo here before we talk to Brian and sign off is Revelations, Book 1 of the Merlin Chronicles by Daniel Deal. Book description: Merlin the magician only exists in myth and legend. At least that's what archaeology student Jason Carpenter thought until he discovered the mysterious orb that had housed history's greatest wizard for 1,600 years. Forced into an uneasy alliance, Jason and Merlin are sucked into a web of deceit, intrigue, and murder that sends them on a chaotic race to outwit and outrun Merlin's ancient nemesis, the evil sorceress Morgana Le Fay, her gang of drug smugglers, and a 500-year-old Chinese necromancer. Tis a race against time to complete their quest before an army of dragons are unleashed on a vulnerable and unsuspecting 21st century world. Once again, that's Revelations, Book 1 of Merlin Chronicles by Daniel Deal. And that ends our promotions and our advertisements for the Writer's Lounge. And now we have a little over 2 minutes here to say goodbye and wrap things up with my co-host, Brian Anderson, who will be on next week. And Brian, a little bit about next week's show from you, not from me, since you're here.
Man, I got so much going on that I couldn't even, I don't know if one show is good enough.
Oh, well, we can't put you on more than one show there. You know, we need to leave room for some other writers here.
Honestly, my friend, yeah, I love being on your show. I would talk about the weather with you.
we've talked about a lot of things off the air, so I know all about that, Brian. So what we will do here is we will wrap things up and thank everybody once again for being on the Writer's Lounge. This was show number 58. What we normally say here on the Writer's Lounge is good reading and good writing, and we'll see you 2 weeks for Brian Anderson. Gotcha. See you later, Brian. Good night.
Bye-bye.
It's dark as night in the middle of the day. Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. God spoke spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. It's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.